Welcome to Manager Tools. Top 10 hiring mistakes. Mistake number 10, being surprised. Part 2, here we go. This cast answers these questions. How can I avoid being surprised with someone resigning? What should I do when someone resigns suddenly? Well, if you want answers to those questions and more, keep listening.
For client organizations who need training accomplished now or before the end of the year, please know that we've retooled all of our standard client offerings of the Effective Manager, Effective Communicator, and Effective Hiring Manager to a virtual delivery. Depending on the venue, we've parsed out the training to be delivered in reasonable time blocks to ensure max learning and participation. Most sessions still involve practice and are priced more affordably than if we came on site. Remote work requires more communication, managerial acumen, and project teamwork. If your group needs help, give us a call. We are here to serve so that you can lead. Contact Maggie at maggie@manager-tools.com.
Okay, Mark, last week we, on this topic of top 10 hiring mistakes, I asked you about that. You don't necessarily intend going like 10, 9, 8, 7, and then the big reveal months down the road, right?
No, I mean, I see this as sort of a rogues gallery. I mentioned it as number 10 only because we'll go to number one, but I'm not saying that number one is the biggest necessarily, but I want people to be able to find them by number. So that's why I numbered them. Okay. I'm not a big fan of the top 10 list. I absolutely think, dude, that we are not normal, because normal is put out a top 10 list because people click on those.
That's right.
It's clickbait. I'm sorry, but they're all stupid. So
yes,
I don't know. Maybe
we should have on our website a top 10 hiring mistakes and Okay. And then present a bunch of ads and try to monetize.
Imagine that we say one of the top 10 hiring mistakes is being surprised. And then people go, well, that's not a hiring mistake. Well, yeah, actually it is.
But okay. So last week we talked about this. We talked about, you know, this on our outline, having a hiring process is literally the first thing you have to do if you don't want to get surprised by sudden resignation. So any longtime listeners of ours will not be surprised if we said, the next thing you need to do is conduct one-on-ones.
Yeah.
No brainer for Manager Tools people.
Look, the reason you're surprised is because you don't know your person well enough.
That's right.
You can't tell that there's a problem. So
you don't have a relationship. If you had a great relationship, people would tell you these things.
Yeah, you'd know. So the single best manager behavior we know of, and I used to apologize. I'm getting tired of saying this. I'm not tired of it anymore. It's the best. It's number one. There you go. It's the one. It only takes one thing. The best thing you can do to engage towards the goal of reducing the chances of surprise resignation is conduct Manager Tools one-on-ones, MTO3s. Okay. Our data shows in every single instance over the past 30 years that when managers started doing MTO3s, their results improved and their retention improved. Now, look, guys, we admit we did not capture surprise resignations as part of the retention improvement metric that we were measuring. Generally, retention is how many of your people did you retain over a period of time? And once you started doing one-on-ones, did your retention improve? And in every case, it did. Okay. We also admit, guys, that improving retention isn't precisely the same thing as eliminating surprise resignations. But if you use that kind of sort of flawed logic, since there's no data which can predict individual outcomes, there's no behavior we can engage in that will help any one manager's retention. Right. And so therefore, none of us have to pay attention to any of the data. But that doesn't change the logic. I don't think it's terribly refutable that if retention improves, resignations and then surprise resignations will be reduced. Like I say, our data is clear that, you know, retention is significantly improved by MTO3s.
And in Manchel's O3s, not only reduce the chances of resignations and therefore surprise resignations, it makes the entire Manchel's hiring process more effective.
Yeah. If you don't do them, we believe that'll negatively impact the effects of any part of a process you use. And, you know, it's a truism that employees leave managers but don't leave companies, there's plenty of evidence out there in the world that managers don't behave as if it's so. In other words, managers don't engage, generally speaking. I know I'm preaching to the choir here to some degree, but managers don't engage in the things that we need to do. And I would say a large part of them, that is because the top 10 lists out there on the internet are all dumb or very nearly dumb. So yeah, you got to do one-on-ones. And this cast, as we've said before, is not going to tell you how to do every single step. Otherwise it would be 5,000 pages long, but we've got tons of guidance about how to conduct MTO3s. In fact, our very second cast was the single most important manager tool. And we've said it before, we had to change the title of that cast. We've changed only a very few titles over the years, but that one, people used to write in and say, where's the one-on-ones? Because it wasn't in the title. It just said the single best manager tool. So yeah, we changed it to
that was silly.
One-on-ones. Yeah. So do one-on-ones, guys. Every week, scheduled every week with all of your directs, 30 minutes long. That's all you need. And we have a guarantee. You start doing one-on-ones our way, you follow our guidance, you will get more time back in your calendar than you spend in your one-on-ones. About the only exceptions we make to that. By the way, the other two key things is you have to let the direct go first. It has to be more about the direct than about you, and you got to take notes. And about the only time we back off one of those is, you know, if you've got 15 or 20 directs, it's okay to think, I can't do that. I can't do weekly. We respect that. Just so you know, you don't have a management problem if you can't manage 15 people in your first job as a manager. You have a structural organizational problem that somebody else is burdening you with. And when you build up some political capital, you ought to recommend splitting your team up. But, you know, that's the basics of manager tools one-on-ones. And for the record, we say MTO3s because there's a lot of guidance out about one-on-ones. I just got into what might be an argument in a polite way with somebody who says, oh, no, we couldn't do that in our company. Our managers all want to do one-on-ones with their directs and with their skips. And, of course, we have a podcast that says don't do one-on-ones with your skips because that undermines the managers beneath you who should be doing one-on-ones with their people. And by the way, the same company was saying, no, we want to do them with skips too, said, we don't have enough time. I'm like, right. Dude, you can't, you know, that's like saying, I want to eat my cake and then have it too. You can't. So anyway, or put it differently, we're doing everything so wrong here that your right thing just seems really wrong to us. Like, okay, keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah. And you know, the great thing about doing managed tools one-on-ones is once you do that, you're going to get all sorts of new knowledge, right? Increased knowledge of your direct skills, their abilities, their traits, their characteristics. You're going to know about their strengths and weaknesses. And with that, you can do our next step, which is do some simple retention analysis of your team. Think about retention in some structured way. And that's the key, right? In some structured way, based upon your knowledge of the individuals you have, based on one-on-ones, right? Makes it pretty simple.
Yeah. And look, guys, I know some of you hear that word structured and you say, you can't really have a structured relationship with people. We're not suggesting your relationship is structured. We're suggesting that in an organizational context, we need to have some structured processes that provide a framework, a format for us to do our learning and to do our analysis of how things are going.
Yeah. And to eliminate surprises because we thought of it in a structured way.
Yeah, that's good. So we recommend you conduct a regular retention analysis. It's pretty simple. You compare performance to risk of loss and you figure out who your people are that are most important that might be at an advanced risk, and you pay attention to that.
Are you saying that I might, as a manager, do more to retain one of my most valuable employees than I might do for one of my worst employees?
Yeah, this is one of the problems with the idea that managers think the company should be responsible for retention. Everybody needs a pay rise or pay raise or whatever, because one size does not fit all. You need an analysis to do, and it's not a complex analysis. I'll explain it here, but you need to know who your best performers are and what their risk is. And we actually have, I think we've done a previous cast where we talk about our retention tool. I'll mention more about that in just a second. We talk about somebody called lottery winners. The people that are low performers on your team, who are also at some reason a high risk for loss, those people we call lottery winners because we wish they win the lottery and leave. Okay. If they're not a high performer and they're at high risk and you spend a lot of time oiling the squeaky wheel to the detriment of your relationship with some of your high performers, you increase the chances that you'll lose a high performer. And we don't want to lose our high performers. Look, we'd like to keep everybody within reason, but you don't have an unlimited amount of time based on everybody's responses to you need to do one-on-ones. No, I don't have time. So now look, regarding the analysis, we don't have any data, guys. We've never tested quarterly versus semi-annual. We've never tested that. But we do know that managers who complete retention analyses have higher retention rates and fewer surprise resignations. They also have higher retention rates, and here's the key, of top performers. Okay. Now, our guidance is more often than annual. The world moves too fast to do just annual retention analyses. And frankly, when I've talked to managers and they say, yeah, we've done a retention analysis, the company asked us to do it, you know, around the time of their performance reviews, you know, that's not good. It's too slow, too rare. Now, the question becomes how often, quarterly, semi-annual. Again, we don't have any data. I would suggest do a couple semi-annually. And then once you've gotten pretty good at it, start doing it quarterly, because pretty soon you'll be able to do it for everybody in your team. Let's assume you have 15 people. It'll take you 15 or 20 minutes. And it will just tell you whether or not things have shifted, since maybe somebody who's a low performer is now a medium performer, but they're still high risk for loss. Maybe they need to be given some attention. Maybe they need to be looked at for a special project. Maybe one of your high performers has become a medium performer. Maybe one of your high performers who was at low risk is suddenly at medium or high risk. And so therefore, whoa, I need to pay special attention there.
And those of you not familiar with what we've recommended relative to a retention tool, that folks change in behavior, right, is a big, big indicator of retention issues, right?
Yeah. And we're not going to be suspicious of people. Look, we want people to seek out their own joy, their own happiness, their own effectiveness in their lives. So we're not trying to lock people in. We're simply trying to avoid people resigning that are effective, that we can save, that we can show them the value of what they're getting here. You know, and anytime somebody comes to you and says, I've got another offer, you need to counter me. That's a big miss for a manager. You're just like, whoa. And then you're panicked, right? So we're going to deliver separate guidance on how to do a simple retention analysis. It's going to be its own cast. It'll probably be more than one. And we're also going to make available, once we finalize it, we have to update the technology behind it, our manager tools retention tool, MTRT. For licensees. So if you're a licensee, you can expect at some point in the future. I would expect less than a year from now, but these things take time and we're in the middle of COVID and who knows. If you're a licensee, we're going to provide a free tool. You'll answer a series of questions and it will plot your people on a graph of risk of loss plus performance.
Yeah. And not only identify where people fit on that strategy, what's the risk of loss and how valuable are they to you, is then recommend some very specific actions you can take to retain them.
So. Exactly. Yeah. So that's coming as well. That's part of what effective managers have been doing for a long, 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 long time. And you don't need to wait until your organization tells you you have to. And by the way, heaven forbid the company say, give me an analysis, and then not give you any structured thinking about how to do it. Because if you're a new manager, you're like, I don't know. Should I just guess? That's not good.
Yeah. And our objective here is much like we did for the interview creation tool, right? Which is make it easy for you as a manager to implement our guidance around behavioral interviewing. Same thing on the retention analysis tool is the ability to make it so simple for you to do that you'll actually do it on a regular basis.
Yeah. And even if you're not really that good at getting to know people, Even if you're naturally a people person, if you don't have a lot of insights, that certainly was true for me early in my career, because I wasn't knowledgeable yet. And forgive yourself for that. Even if you're not very good at it, having some place to start will help you feel more confident about the few first steps you take.
Yeah. Retention tool, we'll have more to talk about that. And we have some guidance out there on retention analysis. So folks, go take a listen if this is something that you're interested in. And you should be, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Okay, so next, let's talk about, you mentioned this a couple times, right? The idea that somebody resigns and the desire by many managers to do what it takes to retain that person.
Yeah, too late.
And we'd recommend don't do that.
Yeah, it's too late. If somebody's offered their resignation, now that's a specific case. I'm not saying you shouldn't try to retain somebody who's a high performer or even a mid-level performer whom you believe is at risk. Okay. But somebody who offers a resignation, and there are plenty of permutations to how resignation events occur. Once someone resigns, it's probably too late to save them. And we don't recommend that you try. Okay. We have guidance related to this in our cast. My Direct is Resigning, Chapter 2, Never Counter Offer. Again, we're not saying, guys, that you can't save somebody you're worried about losing. We encourage you to be creative within reason with the tools you have and that the organization provides to you when you're aware of a resignation risk. That's one thing.
That includes if one of your directs comes to you and says, hey, I'm thinking about looking, or I'm looking at other opportunities. They haven't resigned. She hasn't resigned yet. Yeah. So you still have an opportunity at that point. And if you're having O3s, maybe your chance of somebody saying that to you goes up dramatically.
Yeah. Well, and I would argue that a lot of people won't do that. They won't say, hey, I'm thinking about it. They think they're supposed to be quiet. And in fact, full disclosure, guys, in Career Tools, we don't tell you that you should go to your boss and tell them everything you're doing, because there are some bosses who are jerks who will punish you for that and say, fine. Resign. Actually, I'll make it easy for you. I'll lay you off, right? We don't want that. One of our rules about careers is you need to be in charge of your career. Don't let your organization be in charge of your career. Don't let them lay you off. Have results that keep you from being laid off. Have relationships that keep you from being laid off so that you get to be in charge, because that's the way the world is today, as we've said many, many times. But in the event that one of your folks does resign, we typically see one of two different scenarios play out. In the first one, they already have a competing offer and they've already accepted it or are very likely to. And we've just seen too many situations where managers move heaven and earth only to ultimately lose the candidate. And by the way, that really ticks off your boss. Okay. What's more, we have a tendency when, this is a mid to high performer and she's resigning, that we react a little bit frantically and we don't have a game plan and we just look for money to rain down on them or a new title or something. And we haven't done the political groundwork. Like it or not, politics are a fact of life in organizations. Definition of conflict is two human beings in the same county. Definition of politics, three human beings in the same county. And even if you do keep them, the relationship damage is significant. You'll have a lack of trust. They'll feel like they extorted you. You'll feel extorted and hurt feelings on both sides. In our experience, not always, but in most cases.
Yeah, I've gone through this on both sides of the fence, and it's awkward and bad for both parties. It really is.
And that doesn't change the fact that you're in charge of your career. And if you're the one thinking about leaving, it may create some awkwardness. And if you don't trust your boss enough to be candid with her or him about the situation, you still have an obligation to your family first to seek out the career that gives you the most opportunity to excel, opportunity to be joyful, and opportunity to take care of your family. In the second scenario, there's a smaller group of folks whose motivation for the search they've conducted includes obtaining improved terms from where they already are, from their existing manager, usually in the form of a counteroffer. And in our experience, most managers' response is just as frantic as in the first scenario. But imagine that you find out later that they were just shopping themselves, and this tends to happen in a good market, probably less happening right now, would have certainly happened in January of 2020, and probably will happen again within a year or so. And all of our guidance is timeless and timely, so we believe this is the norm. Suppose you find out later after you counteroffered somebody that they went out and got the other offer in part or mainly to get more from you. And look, we think this strategy, however clever it's deemed in the career world, oh, aren't you a clever operator? We think that's borderline unethical.
Dude, I don't even think it's borderline. It is unethical. Yeah. You're going to look for jobs. You're going to interview and take another company's time and energy, which equals money, to interview you. And your intent is to never take the job. In the case where you're just using it for leverage with your existing job, that
I think what they would say in defense of themselves, Mike, is no, I didn't say I would never take it. Mm-hmm. Because in fact, I might very well take it if my strategy doesn't plan out and my company doesn't come back and counteroffer me and I'll just leave in a huff, which, by the way, I think that ends poorly too in a lot of cases. Not saying there aren't cases where it ends well, but there are more cases, I think, where it ends poorly. We generally don't appreciate somebody using gray area tactics to get something from us for their own benefit. Call us old-fashioned. I don't know.
Or just ethical, one of the two.
Now, look, guys, don't confuse this with the employee who comes to you and says he's frustrated and disappointed and considering looking around. That's different. It's a retention risk. And we encourage you, based on their value to the organization, we're not saying about their personal value, because their personal value is a human soul worthy of respect and decency and kindness, okay? But our job as a manager is to assess people relative to their value for the organization. It's only one small part of who they are, and we're not judging them. We're valuing or evaluating them. But we encourage you to consider what you might do, provided you believe they're approaching you in good faith. But if you don't think somebody's approaching you in good faith, I don't know. Maybe that says something about the relationship. Maybe it'll never return.
There are so many ways to get manager tools training now. In person, public, client, virtual, video. How do you choose? Well, the video version is for you if you need the content in bite-sized pieces, at irregular times, or with a low bandwidth device. No matter what version you choose, you'll get the same content and the same practice. No matter the delivery, you'll be a more effective manager, effective communicator, or effective hiring manager once you've been through the training. Check us out at manager-tools.com.
So if somebody does resign, right? So we're not going to try to retain them. We're not going to counteroffer. That doesn't go well. Certainly, we have to do something. And so our recommendation then is you shun them, you cancel them. I'm trying to be hip and
cancel them.
Some hashtags with their names or some, I don't know, something like that, right? That's what we do.
No, that's not what we do. And by the way, something else, guys, wouldn't it be nice if you had somebody ready to step into their shoes? Sure it would. And whose job is that? Ours. Yours.
Ours. Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Exactly.
So when somebody leaves and you're in a panic, it's because, as we like to say, when did Noah build the ark? Before the rain, okay? Oh, by the way, Mike, somebody wrote me the other day and says they were tired of me using the Noah build the ark before the rain because it was a biblical reference and he wasn't spiritual or wasn't biblical in his beliefs and so on. I said, yeah, I think that example is sort of it's become humanistic at this point. If that example or analogy doesn't work for you folks, choose whichever one you like about preparing in advance.
Yeah. Grasshopper and ant, whatever you want.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a good one.
Look, the answer when somebody does resign is to wish them well.
What?
Okay? Yeah, yeah. Look, if you're not going to keep them, it's time to congratulate them, okay? Do not skip this step out of spite or a sense that they're no longer on the team. If you trusted this person yesterday, the day before, and you wanted what was best for them, and that's partially what trust includes, if it's a mutual trust. Even if what you wanted was best for them within your own org, it would give the lie to your previous relationship with them to dismiss them, to cut them out, or to be anything other than cordial and supportive. If I worked for Mike, and unfortunately it wasn't working out, and I came to him, and there's not a lot he could do, and I decided I needed to leave, and he then cut me out. He says, fine, whatever. Good luck. Goodbye. And he was dismissive about it. That would tell me that my entire relationship with him was based on my utility to him. That's not a trusting relationship, guys. It's not.
And that might communicate that to you, but it would also communicate that same truth to every other one of my directs. And folks, if you think they don't pick up on that stuff, you are wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. Remember, folks, you're not managing their career. They are. They've made the choice that's best for them. How can we, in good conscience, develop a trusting relationship with somebody conditioned on the fact that they work for us? We can't. Trust isn't conditional. Okay. Leaving a company, leaving you, isn't a breach of trust. The at-will world we live in means there are not binding promises made about work relationships. And trust isn't something that can be confined to only one area of our lives and only one part of our connection with other people. So you might say this, hey, congratulations. I'm so happy for you. You found something better for you, and I'll always want that for you. Okay. You're the one that gets to make that decision. Look, I'm sorry it wasn't here. I'm sorry I didn't do more. But I've said I trust you for the past 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, whatever it is. And I'm not going to stop now. And that trust wasn't conditional on you being a team member here.
Yeah.
By the way, this is grace. And you're going to have bumps in the road. Okay. The more you handle those bumps with grace, the more other people are going to see you not as a manager, but as a leader. And they're going to understand that you can be forgiving and understanding, because what will we put on earth to do if not to help one another through?
And it happens. I've been on so many ends of this conversation, but I've been the person who resigned, left, went to another company, and less than a half year later realized I made a mistake.
Yes.
And I went back to my old company. And the fact that they handled it with grace was a big piece of that. And they wanted me back.
Yeah. And the fact that you weren't a jerk about it allowed you to go back. This is MCI and Bell Atlantic, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, good. Okay, so the next thing is, okay, you wish them well, and they're not gone yet, so it's okay for you as a manager to expect a professional transition, okay? They've resigned, you wish them well, it's both your job and, more so, their job to see that they leave the organization in a professional way. Somebody who says, I resigned, my last day is in 15, I'm leaving in 15 minutes. That's unprofessional, okay? That actually gives the lie to their situation. And they might say, well, the company said they had to have me today. Well, what you're saying is your brand new employer, whom you never worked for, you don't have any really super strong relationships with in a formal way. You might know people over there. They might even be your best friends. Doesn't matter. All of that and the interview process you went through of a couple of 3 or 4 hours trumps the 1, 2, 3, 5 years you've been here? I don't think so. Now, look, we've given guidance before that if it's you that's leaving, there's a whole raft of steps we recommend you take, okay? And it's reasonable, it may not be perfect, but it's reasonable for someone who surprises you with a resignation to agree to do most of the tasks a true professional would. I know this sounds really corny, but I'm a big fan of Abraham Lincoln. And one of the quotes he's famous for saying, I think it was in Second Inaugural, is to bind up our wounds, right? When somebody leaves, there's a breaking apart. There's some sadness, some loss. And part of the way that sadness, loss is healed is by, once it happens, people behaving responsibly, professionally, respectfully, each toward the other party.
We've laid this out in a podcast called How to Resign.
Yes. Enough.
And we're going to talk about some of the key deliverables here for the resigning direct in a second. But for folks who are licensees, would it be fair use from our perspective if somebody resigned that you could print out the show notes to that cast and hand that to the person?
Absolutely. Why wouldn't you? Say, look, There's some of this you could still do. You know, usually when people get frustrated, they don't start thinking, okay, I need to make my bed. I need to dot my I's and cross my T's. I need to handle this professionally. I need to close this chapter in my life with respect, elegance, dignity, grace. That's not what happens. People get excited about finding something else. And so they put all their attention into that. And then they get the thrill of getting an offer, probably for more money. And then they accept it and their family's all excited. And maybe they have a shorter commute or they get to move closer to family or friends or whatever. And so most people don't handle this well.
Okay. Yeah, they realize it later on, and they're ashamed because nobody taught them. The losing company generally doesn't teach them. Certainly, the company they're going to is not going to tell them, okay, by the way, when you resign, here's how to go do it. So if you're listening to this podcast, you know, so share it with your directs.
Yeah. So we'll just mention a few things, I think four or five of things that are highlighted in the transition how to resign podcast. The first thing you need to ask them to do is to prepare a key project report transition file. Now, that's longer than one page. It's an overview of everything they're working on, the status of those projects, the issues, maybe politics, relationships, okay? Probably a spreadsheet or two of important top projects, but it's not just tasks. It's not just I'm red, I'm amber, I'm green here, okay? That's one thing. They also, if they're a manager, they owe you performance files on their team, okay? They owe you interim reviews of everyone at a minimum. I mean, look, if you don't have too complex a performance review, heck, even if you do have a complex performance review, they ought to handwrite a performance review for each one of their people so that the person who takes over, if your company does annual performance reviews and the person who takes their place is only their manager for 6 months, they get a good review of the person's previous 6 months. And the new person will sit down with you at the end of the year and say, how do we balance this person's performance with what in with me for 6 months or 3 months or however long they're there with the previous 3 or 6 months that they were with the previous boss who has left. And you may need to schedule a meeting with them to go over details and for you to read through their direct reports and to make some additional notes because what they wrote wasn't significant enough. Now, through no fault of their own, they just maybe didn't give you all the details that you'd want to have before you pass this person off to reporting to somebody else. By the way, if you're a director or a VP and somebody leaves, you probably won't get to pick their replacement unless you have somebody that can step right in. And that means you need to have, you as the manager of the director of this manager, you need to have files you can hand to the new guy. Because let me tell you, if Mike is the VP and I'm the director and Kate is the manager and Kate resigns, when Mike picks, let's say, Sarah to take Kate's place, I owe Mike and Sarah close out files from Kate because she left. I owe that to Mike. That's my job. I have to help whoever Mike picks to take Kate's place because I don't get to do it. Promotion decisions about managerial roles are never made by one person up. They're made by a person, two people up. Okay. That would include a performance file on their team, would include a performance interim review, as I mentioned. Okay. They need to prepare instructions for when they're gone. You know, recommendations for continuation of the work that they and maybe their team are doing if they're a manager. They need to make some recommendations about operational continuation. Okay. And then a one-page interim successor document. If they're a manager, ask for a document to help you have your first conversation with their temporary replacement. Okay, here's what they're doing. Here's what I want to keep doing. They were doing these 7 things. I want you to stop doing that. That's too big a bridge for you to cross right now. Let's focus on these 2 or 3 things. We're going to put those things on hold and I'll work with you in the next couple of weeks to figure out what our plan is to get those things restarted. Now, we mentioned at the start of this, the value of a hiring process. Imagine you just heard that a direct of yours is suddenly resigning. How good are you going to be if you haven't prepared all this in advance? Imagine how much better you'll be If you have a process and you know where it is and you can find it in 2 minutes, this list of transition items. In which scenario will you be more calm, more respectful, more able to show genuine happiness that this person has found something better? Who gets to decide what's better for them? They do. How likely are you to be more creative about the details if you have a process? Even if the process is only 70% of the way there, it doesn't matter. You can rely on it. You say, okay, we open the playbook and we run the playbook. And that allows you to be at peace about what's happening rather than being frantic and responsive, thinking, I'm losing them. And, oh, I don't know what to do after I've lost them.
Yeah. Okay. Next one. Start workload priority analysis. Yeah.
This is one of my very favorite things. And I would love to think that when I retire, it's as popular as one-on-ones. It won't be, of course. One-on-ones are kind of cool right now, which is nice, by the way. We prefer MTO3s, but anything is better than nothing.
Well, I tell you, this one, it's one of my favorites for same reasons you mentioned, but also because of that little hidden gem, which is if you do this and you explain to your boss what you've done and why you might make a different decision than the average manager, your boss will love you.
You're like, whoa, dude, you're like super manager.
Yeah, Superman. You're like, yeah, you're thinking like an executive, not a manager. Wow.
Exactly. Okay, the resignation has happened. You got to do some stuff. But let's remember, go back to first principles, guys. Our first responsibility as effective managers is to achieve results in a sustainable way, which means through retention. A surprise resignation doesn't help. But overreacting doesn't help either, and it doesn't help a lot more, okay? A resignation isn't the end of the world. It happens. Yeah, we ought to have known. And we will know a great deal more and more often if we engage in these systematic prophylactic behaviors. But remember, our standard for retention is not 100%. It never is. Effective manager ought to know what his firm's retention rate is and have a retention rate better than that. Okay. A surprise resignation creates a little anxiety, a little panic, and a little knee-jerk reaction, and that is ill-advised. The effective response to an open position is to reassess the effectiveness of one's team. In many cases, not most, but in many cases, a significant enough number that it's worth talking about, 20, 30, 40, maybe even close to 50%, maybe even more, the right decision may very well be to not hire a replacement for that person. I think it's easier for most people to think of this when it's an individual contributor who's leaving, because people think, oh, if a manager leaves, well, of course, we're going to replace him or her. Not always, but it's more likely, sometimes for good reasons, sometimes not. And the reasons for not hiring, guys, when you lose somebody, and by the way, we say this here to help calm you down, so the next time you get a surprise resignation, even if you haven't done all the other steps, I just want to tell you, you don't have to panic like, oh my gosh, I've got to go through a hiring process. You may not have to, okay? And the reasons for not doing that, for not hiring, are pretty significant. First of all, look, guys, whether you like it or not, I don't care how busy you are. It's true about all human organizations. There's waste. Waste is work that's being done, hours being spent, money being paid, labor costs being tallied, that do not lead most efficiently or effectively to the accomplishment of your assigned results. In our experience, there are always 2 or 3 or 5 or 10 projects that are ongoing that started with good intention, but have lost their relative value to the organization, and you should kill them. And I'll give you a good example of that, guys. This is August of 2020. We just had the single greatest economic decline in terms of steepness in the history of mankind, thanks to COVID-19. I'm guessing there's stuff you're not working on, and nobody's upset about it. In fact, there was an assumption. You should assume there was an assumption by your CEO and all of her directs and their directs and so on that, yeah, we are really getting focused now, right? You just went through this process, maybe unconsciously. Nope, not doing that, not doing that. You didn't even have to tell anybody because all we're doing is X or Y or Z. And that by definition, if all we're doing is X, we ain't doing anything else. And all those other things have been killed, even if they haven't been formally or officially killed. But a manager, when a company, when an organization, a division says, we're killing this project. Oh, that's political. Ooh, who is in charge of it? Oh, what are the ramifications? But you know what? When you're a manager, you're beneath that. And you can say, we're not doing this anymore. When one of your people comes to you and goes, well, what do we say when people say, just tell them, talk to me. We're not doing that. I don't know if you've noticed, but we're in danger here. The organization may not survive. And so everybody has to make decisions. We're not going to wait from things from on high, because let me tell you, that's going to take weeks, months. I know some companies that still haven't cut spending, and they're not sitting on a ton of cash. They're like, oh, somebody else will save us. Kill them, guys. Kill those projects. There's also inefficiency that happens. Sometimes work is being done towards a goal that makes sense, but the assignment of work that made sense a year or two ago has made the team inefficient in the last year. Okay? Personalities are considered, and so some people get on the team that shouldn't be on the team. On project teams, favors are repaid. People get to do this or that or the other thing. Seniority plays too much of a part in assignments. Some non-waste, useful effort, work that actually leads to your results, can be reassigned, simplified, streamlined, cut out a part of the project that seems not to be working that isn't core to the project. You're supposed to do that. You're not supposed to wait for your boss to bless it. You can brief her later on it, okay? If your team has been stable for quite a while, I promise you, waste has increased. Use a surprise resignation to reassess what you're working on. So, tell your team straight up, folks, before I'm going to request hiring authority, before I'm going to go through the political process of getting an open rack, you will review, I'm going to review every what everyone's working on here and determine what can be cut before we hire. Now look, don't ask everyone to justify what they're doing. Enlist them in identifying places where cuts can be made. When a sudden resignation has happened and you say, I'm looking at things we can set aside, because there's just been a loss, people aren't thinking you're thinking, I'll get rid of more people. If you have a stable team and you say, I want to do a workload analysis and figure out what needs to go, people will respond politically. But when there's already been a loss, you say, look, we may have to decide what work doesn't get done and reassign some things. And yeah, there'll be some frustration or so on, but this is what your organization expects of you. Now, could you quickly eliminate this idea if your surprise resignation was from your, say, top performer and he was working on a high visibility project? Probably not. And I say probably. But applying the opposite approach of, oh my gosh, we need somebody else right now to all resignations isn't as systematically smart as saying the majority of resignations first justify a workload and a priority analysis. And then the exception is that rare key person's loss, which would cause you to go, yeah, we've got to replace her. Okay. It's always important to have processes for most situations and then deal with exceptions. What most managers have done wrong over the years, I know I did it, is when I lose somebody, I replace them. That's the process. And then there might be an exception. That's wrong. The process should be, let's take a look. Maybe we can go by without them.
Yeah. And if you're an executive listening to this or a senior manager, somebody who has managers working for you and they lose somebody and you don't ask them every single time to do this, you're missing an opportunity.
Yeah.
One, exactly. Missing an opportunity to save money and be more effective. And secondly, missing the opportunity to train one of your managers to make them a better manager and a future executive.
Yeah. Okay. And again, this is a high level review. So we're summarizing here. There's more to come. And I think I mentioned it at the top of the first show that this is only hiring. We still have to talk about the top 10 interviewing mistakes as well. So, summarize. A surprise resignation, guys, gals, is usually a result of other failures. Having a systemic approach to hiring reduces their frequency and gives you a better way of dealing with them. That's how you minimize the frequency of surprise resignations, and their impact if they do still happen. And in the months ahead, we'll continue to dig deeper into all these ideas we've given you, some of which we've already expanded upon, like how to resign. That's it.
So much to learn. So much.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, dude, the older I get, the less I know. Only because I'm comparing it to the broader universe. I feel like I know more now than I did when I was 25, but relatively speaking, no, just getting started. I need another lifetime. That's what I want.
There you go. Hey, if you want to be great at anything, that's the level of effort required. Yeah. And man, the impact managers have on folks' lives. Yeah, I used to say this a lot when I used to be at a lot of conferences, but man, you have an opportunity to change for the better a lot of folks' lives. And to do that, you got to be great at what you do. And your primary responsibility as a manager is to manage people. And you do that, Mark and I both believe if we all do that, we can make the world a much, much better place. So,
yeah, that's what we're here to do, is to make the world a better place, to serve more people with our products and services. I'm not talking about manager tools, I'm talking about every company in the world. To do it well enough that more people want it because what you provide is effective and fair and reasonable. And you treat customers well and you'll get more customers and that will bring more good people to you.
Yeah.
It's a good thing.
It is a very good thing. All right, my friend. I enjoyed that.
Thanks, partner.
We'll see you later. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next week. In the meantime, have a great one. So long.